This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This is Tyrese Campbell.
This is Lou Roberts.
This is Ben Wilmot.
And you're listening to the Every Step Along the Way podcast.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the Every Step Along the Way podcast. Well, that's all the international palaver out of the way. We're back into the proper football, the crunch eight games that are going to make or break our season. Now, today I'm joined by my ever-reliable co-star, the yin to my yang, the Starsky to my hutch, Mr. Daniel Buxton. Evening, Dan, how are you?
The bill to your Ben.
The bill to my Ben.
Yes, I'm all right. Thank you, mate. Looking forward to, yes, I've just watched Jude Bellingham get England out of trouble. The 95th minute equaliser, so hopefully Stoke don't need anything as drastic as that when we travel to Hull on Good Friday. And yes, I'm here to tell you why we're going to win the game, although I don't think we're going to win the game.
I was going to say, I know you're not feeling 100%, a bit like me. We're feeling a bit off at the minute, but I don't think you're quite that delusional, are you, really? But maybe you are. Anyway, someone who hopefully is going to be more on my side than Dan's overly positive side, I'm only joking, but Laurie, welcome back to the pod.
Cheers, Mike. Yeah, thanks for having us on again. I mean... What have we got in store for the next eight matches? Who knows? You could roll the dice. You might roll a six, but I think we all know that we're going to roll a one or a two. So yeah, we shall see. But yeah, great to be back on. Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure, mate. And you know what? That we were saying on the pod we did the other day that was released on Monday, around, you know, the looking ahead at these eight games and just kind of saying that we've been asking for an interesting end to a season for some time. I don't quite think we meant on the opposite end of this, towards the bottom of the table. That we're more referring to the top, but clearly that ain't going to be happening anytime soon. So yeah, we'll get into it. Now, this particular part, obviously, we're going to be doing all the normal things we normally do, but obviously, because of the international break, it's been a while since Norwich. So what we are going to discuss very briefly, we'll talk about Norwich, but no one probably wants to relive that for very long. So we'll give you a very brief overview, because I know people have asked for it already. So we'll definitely do that for you. And I guess the fact that we've tried to block out the performance, from my memories, it does feel a long time ago. Now, of course, we've come away with a 3-0 loss. Unfortunately, we seem to concede a lot of goals at home this season, this time obviously to Norwich. I guess, Laurie, I'll come to you first. Where did it go wrong against Norwich, would you say?
Defensive car crash is what I've got written down in my notes, Mike. Just defensive frailties again. I mean, this is almost like a bit of a rinse and repeat of potentially many conversations that we've had as a group. But yeah, just very poor, not organised, no leadership in those key areas. And I mean, we will get onto the man of the matches, but when your goalkeeper's man of the match, particularly at home as well, It's just a very uphill battle, like from start to finish. So, yeah, I don't want to sound too doom and gloom, but it was just a pitiful performance.
I think 3-0 was probably flattering us a little bit, don't you think? It could have been 5 or 6 if, as you said, if Iverson wasn't on the other end of some of them saves, a few good quality saves, but without him, it could have been another Leicester result.
Yeah, absolutely. He was pulling off some fantastic saves and saved our blushes, really. I know 3-0, you wouldn't say is it embarrassing, but it's kind of verging on embarrassing, but it's certainly without some of his solid saves during their gaming, it could have been 6.
Dan, Laurie mentioned, you know, poor defence there. Was there any particular person that was to blame? Was a Schumacher to blame? Did he set the defence up wrong for you? Or was it just the fact that Norwich were streets ahead of us in terms of quality and they just spotted all of our weaknesses and took advantage? Where do you think this defensive frailty was? Who was to blame, basically? Was it the defence or was it the manager with a poor setup?
I think that it would have been... Like before the game, when the team come out, I thought, yeah, fair enough, do it in the back. I can see what he's doing. I can see why he's gone that way. But I think from literally from the first minute, it was obvious that Norwich, down their wings, had far too much space. The fullbacks and the wingers were doubling up on our fullbacks, who we know, Hoover and Gooch, aren't massively, you know, aren't the strongest defensively in the league. And they were being exposed, were being pulled apart. And I think it was another team as well who've come with quite good agility, quick movement of the ball, pass and move. And I think we've, again, struggled. If you look at Blackburn, they were the same style. Leicester, the same style. And you know, they put 3 and 5 past us. Hull, same, you know, good, we're getting onto Hull. But when they came to the Bet365, they played a similar style. They put 3 past us as well. So we do seem to have a big weakness against teams that move the ball quickly and intricately and in short spaces and stuff. And I think it showed, like I say, from very early doors. And the manager, to be fair, I think was a bit slow to react. It was only... by the time the goal came, everyone in that ground had seen what had happened and could see the danger developing again and again. And we were given a couple of let-offs before, and he potentially should have changed it beforehand, to be fair to him.
It's a question to both of you, really. Did anyone come out of this with any kind of credit? I mean, one person I often slate was Kiana, but I mean that move that he did down the right hand side, you know, weaving his way through, and obviously he hits the post. I mean, on another day, that's a worldie, and you're comparing it to his first season with us where he was just fantastic going forward. Obviously we've seen nowhere near enough of that this year. Was there any other positives, anyone else come out of this with much credit other than Iverson and Henry?
I think to be fair, I think, say, Hoover recently has stepped his game up, and I think he's cut out a lot of the errors defensively, and he's starting to feel a bit more positive and a bit more confident on the ball going forward. I think it's maybe gone a bit unnoticed due to the rest of the defence, they not sort of pulling the weight, if you like, in the last few games. But for me, I think him on the right-hand side, he is working his way back towards the Hoover that we saw, you know, at the back end of last season and the very beginning of this. It just probably is just coming a little bit late for his Stoke career, if we're honest. But yeah, I think it was a great run. Like I say, attacking wise, a great run. And like I say, if he puts that goal in, you know, what first goals can do to games might have been a completely different story then.
Could have been very different, Dan. I agree. And it makes me wonder, you know, with these loan players, now if I'm a player been on loan, right, I am looking at these next 8 games as being a shopping window, right? You know, maybe Keanu's thinking of this, and you know, maybe he hasn't got many suitors yet. You know, not many people are knocking on his agent's front door saying, you know, I want to bring you in next season, blah, blah, blah. I mean, this is a time for all of them to go, right, okay, next season I might not be at Stoke, so where am I going to go next? For me, if I'm one of them players, and you know, I'd want to impress. I want everyone else, especially, you know, we've got some games coming up on TV, which, I mean, obviously we've got scouts who don't need the television to go and do that, but still, there's going to be plenty of eyes on them over the next few weeks. So if I'm one of them players, I'm going to be busting a gut. And if, you know, it's going to help Stoke anyway, they're here to do the best for Stoke City anyway. But from a selfish perspective, all of them have got to be looking at this as a shop window, a little bit like with Eric Peters when he did it. You know, he was great until he got his contract, and then he got his contract and he completely went off the boil again. I mean, Laurie, you, I think you maybe were going to mention, did anyone else come out of this with credit for you, or has Dan pretty much covered it?
Mostly covered, really. I mean, we've spoken in depth about the goalkeeper. Keanu, the finger points at Keanu quite a lot, and it is down to his, I'm going to say, reluctance defensively. He does have moments where he wants to work hard in a defensive position, but on the whole, I think that he can be quite lazy. He definitely suits being higher up the field, but Stoke have never been a three at the back team. And this is another manager who wants to kind of chop and change between a four and a three. And yes, there can be question marks about, okay, then right, if we're going to go to a four, who is that four going to be? But I just think teams very easily pick off Stoke when we're playing with that three. I don't think we're disciplined enough and understand that system of a three with then two wing backs bombing up and down the park. So for me, we have to always set up with a four, and we've got to be very careful in these next eight games when we're setting ourselves up, and we need to work on a platform that's going to suit us. And for me, that's going to be a four at the back. Looking forward and discussing who else came out with real credit other than the goalkeeper, the answer for me is not very many people at all.
No, I think that's a fair point. I agree with you on the whole four at the back. I've said it a couple of times recently. I think we're in the territory of, let's try and not lose the game, and let's just try and let the attacking players do what they need to do. You defenders, sit there and defend. You know, if you're a holding midfielder, sit there and just don't move. Like, go and do the basics and get them right, make us hard to beat, and we can let, you know, the John Hoes, the Burgers, the Ennises, those types of players, you know, the Manhoof, we can let them go and try and win as the game, but we need to have that level platform. We need to have that starting platform. We've talked about first goals over and over again this season because it's still relevant. If we get the first goal and we're solid, it builds confidence. We take the lead. We're probably not going to go and then lose the game, statistics tell you. So I agree with you. I think four at the back's the way we need to do it. And just, again, don't care whether it's the most ugliest football you've seen in years. If that's what it takes, that's what it takes. Against the likes of Hull, Southampton, people like that, there's no point trying to play wing backs and people against them, because we haven't got the personnel to do it. That's what we need to do. So I couldn't agree with you more on that one. One other thing I took from the game, and you're welcome to bring in your own, there wasn't many chances for us, let's be honest. The one other one that sticks in my mind was Josh Lorenz's header. And I can't remember if it was from a cross or from a corner. I can't quite remember, but he was about 6 yards out, if that.
It's a corner.
And he... it was a corner, yeah. He's just nodded it straight over. I mean, I think if we would have had that chance again, he probably would have finished that. I thought it was whether he wasn't expecting it to come over, I don't know, but he was completely open and he should have done better on that for me.
Yeah, because he was pretty much unmarked as well, wasn't he? I think, like you say, I think he knew instantly that the net should be bulging at that point, shouldn't it? When he's probably another, there's quite a few players, because obviously we've scored so few goals and we've got quite a few streaky goal scorers, aren't we, on our side? We know that Josh Lorenz can go, you know, a good three quarters of the season without scoring, but then if he gets one, he's proven before that he can then go on a run and get, you know, four or five and six, seven games. I think he's the only one. I think Baker's another one into you. Although being a bit more consistent with his goal scoring, he's another one into you can get, you know, who can go on a good run of scoring quite a few in a short space of time. Vidigal did it at the start of the season, so he's obviously got that in his locker. We didn't know whether Juno getting 2-2 was whether he could be in the middle of one of those runs, but that just like I say there, there's just a few players who we could do with just getting a goal, because it might just spur them into getting enough goals for us to get enough points over the next, you know, 8 games to keep us up, really.
Just out of interest, in terms of the people who obviously didn't come off the bench as well, like Haksabanovic and Lloris and Vidigal, just to pick those three people out, do you think their time at this club's over? Because they're not even getting a chance now.
I think it's harsh because there's so many substitutes and they brought 5 on. You just can't. It's what suited the game at that particular time when the manager was looking to make his changes.
And it seems a regular occurrence, though, Dan. I mean, Hacks doesn't barely get a chance. Lloris doesn't get a chance once or twice. Yeah, but
I think it's interesting if you're going for if you're looking to score a goal, is Lloris your best option when you've got. You know, if you're taking off a creative winger to put some fresh legs in and some, are you going to reduce your attacking output by putting Lloris on wide right instead of just, you know, say you're bringing Manoff off or Juno off, are you going to get the same amount of creativity from putting Lloris on the wing? Probably not. If you're chasing the game, it doesn't make sense really, does it, to make that change. What Lloris does give you is he's shown Anthony he's got great aerial ability, he's got fantastic work rate. I think maybe if you were starting the game with Lloris, I think that's probably a better option. And maybe if you were looking to hold what you got, or if you had a left back who was shown to be a bit jittery, you know, you knew you could get Lloris to be all over him like a rash and force sort of like a problem, or for, you know, force an error out of him. Or even just boot it into touch and let you get yourselves, you know, into the final third for a throw, you know, to build from a throw-in, then I think that's where his strengths come into it. But like I say, it's not... I'm not sure whether when you're chasing the game and it's an open game and you're bringing somebody who's quite creative off, whether bringing Lloris on doesn't hinder you. For Haksabanovic, he's probably going back to Celtic. He's been injured. I think he's fell down the manager's pecking. He's probably just not seen enough of him, to be fair. And he's at the stage of the season where he probably wants to put somebody on the pitch who he knows what he's getting from, or at least he knows what they're capable of. And with Haksabanovic, he, like I say, he probably just hasn't seen enough to know, you know, what his strengths are or what he wants from him, or him to know what the manager wants from him. Who's the Vidigal? I think his form merits where he currently is in the pecking order, and that's up to him to rekindle that early season form and show him he wasn't just a fluky purple patch, and that is he has got a bar higher than what we've seen since probably mid-September.
Yeah,
cause I think he's still in the top goal scorer, Laurie, considering he's barely kicked a ball in months, it feels like. It says a lot about our season, doesn't it?
A horrible thought, isn't it? I was looking on statistics earlier and Football Stats Org. I'm not sure how valid that is. I mean, it looks like quite a tidy website. But in home games, 53% of our home games, we have not scored a goal. It's shocking. And, you know, substitutes do come into play when you're looking at a statistic like that. Do we roll the dice enough where we're bringing players on to impact the game? You'd argue not. We've discussed our defensive frailties, but also are we willing to take risks and try and get forward to try and get ourselves back into games or potentially snatch victories. The answer is no, unfortunately.
Yeah, fair enough. So I don't really go on much more about this Norwich game, if I'm honest with you. Is there any other points you want to discuss before we just wrap up with the man of the match and some audio? Anything from you, Dan?
No, other than obviously I think there was the incident one there with Tyrese Campbell being subbed off. Don't you want to touch on the crowd reaction to that?
I mean, the crowd don't need much of a reaction to boo Tyrese these days, let's be honest. It's one of them. I don't know, I like Tyrese, but it's one of them. Like, that's why I'm struggling with that, right? Because I do like him. It's just not worked. He doesn't deserve a new contract based on what he's doing. I think it's one of them. There's always a boo boy at Stoke. Joe Allen was one of them. Obviously, Tyrese has been the next one. Trying to be very much down the line and honest, he's not done enough. He's not scored enough goals. He's struggled to stay fit. He doesn't chase back a lot of times for some people, and I do see elements of that. But then again, he's a bursting striker, which means that they don't typically chase back, but he's there for the other moment, which again you can get away with if you're offering those other moments, and I don't think he has been a lot of the times. So everyone's very much entitled to react how they want against the player. That's fine. I can see him being one of them players, Dan, who leaves us and goes on and scores a hat full of goals for somebody else. And maybe that's what Tyrese needs. He needs a new environment. And no doubt he's already signed and sealed pretty much for another club. So good luck to him. But we aren't the right club for him anymore.
No, I just think I understand that people, like I say, have got their own opinions on players. And yeah, there's players that I like. There's players that you get frustrated more with, and for me, I would never, no matter how much I liked or was frustrated or disliked a player, I don't think that reaction is helpful in any matter, especially when we're in the situation we're in. You're not booing just him, though, because the rest of the players will hear that and will see that. And when you've made a massive deal about, you know, where in John Walters' battle cry did it say boo off your own players when they get subbed off, or ironically cheer off your own players when they get subbed off? I don't think he mentioned that bit, did he?
It's the fear factor as well, isn't it? It instills fear in the other players, thinking if I make a mistake, they're going to boo me next.
Exactly, yeah. And it's not, and you know, as much as what you think, there's, you know, Jordan Thompson is, he considers his best friend in football to be Tyrese Campbell. He said that there'll be other players in that squad who are close to him, and it'll affect them. You know, like you say, it'll affect other players, especially say we've got quite a young and experienced squad, and some of them will be looking and thinking, you know what. Is that going to be me? Am I going to be the next one? Well, because he's leaving. Chances are he's going to be leaving in the summer. So who's going to be the next one they're coming for? We've just had such a long spell of players really struggling to take that initiative at home and to take risks at home. And then we saw that. What happened was, obviously, Walters, when he came in, and he came out and he said, I want to get behind the lads, show them support, show them you're behind them and you're not ready to jump on the backs, which obviously had come from the players. They'd obviously said that to him, that that's how they feel, for him to come out and ask that of the supporters. And you saw in that match against Middlesbrough, you weren't a bad side, and we totally dominated that game from start to finish, and that was why. I mean, they had a couple of chances, but we took control of that, and the players played with a bit more freedom. They were happy to take a few more risks, and the crowd stayed with them. And you've just got over that, and you think, oh, that's something to build on. And the very next home game, you're straight back to doing that. And it might only be for one player, but like I say, it will affect the rest of the squad. And it's not helpful anyway. If you, I think he gets a lot of runs you stick. I've said that many times. I think the stuff that he does do goes unnoticed because people don't want to see it. People see what they want to see, and that goes with, you know, that doesn't go with Tyrese Campbell. That goes with a lot of players. That's a lot of fans at a lot of different clubs. People see sometimes, if especially if they've made their mind up, they'll stick with what they want their point to be, or they've convinced themselves that that's all the only thing that happens, and that, you know, that's human nature. That's but that reaction is, do not think it's helpful. I understand people, you paid your money, you want to voice and express your opinion in however way you see fit. But if you want this club to stay up this season, if you want players who are going to entertain you and express themselves and play with flair, then don't start heckling them and booing them. And because as a unit, they will shrink back and we're back to where we were a month ago, and where we've been for probably the last 4 or 5 years.
Laurie, are you
going to
say something?
Yeah, fans always want a scapegoat, don't they? When things are going wrong, they want a player to point the gun at. And unfortunately, in that moment, it was Therese. So he was the scapegoat. I've written down in capitals, our players freeze in front of our fans. And we've seen them. We've seen their body language. They look panicky. They look rushed. And they can't deal with that toxicity of the fans when things aren't going well. And the statistics at home speak for themselves, don't they? And it's not been good enough, and the players' performance haven't. But as Dan rightfully said, those players aren't just going to turn around and start delivering top quality performances with our fans the way that they are at the moment. The fans need to deal with the team how they tried best to do against Middlesbrough, and it got us a result. Of course, the last 8 games aren't going to be any oil paintings, and we are going to have to dig in at times, but that has got to come from the stands. It's got to come from all of us, and we've got to literally drag those players through. And then in the summer, the club's got a lot of thinking to do and a lot of discussions to have. Might be a complete revamp of the squad again. Some of them are very young, most of them are very young, but that's the decision that they've got to make in the summer. In the meantime, what we've got to do is maintaining this division.
Yeah, exactly. We've got 8 World Cup finals, if you want to put, you know, or international Euro finals, whatever the hell you want to call it. We've got them now, because if we talk about, I think you're both spot on. Like, regardless of what you think about any players, Luke, I've absolutely gone to Keanu this year. I've never once booed him off the pitch, because that's just not how I feel I want to express how I feel about a player. Like, I'll criticise and I'll give my reasons for it. That's kind of where it stops for me. But as you rightly point out, Laurie, these players, I think, are scared absolutely at their wits when they come to Bet365. The fact we lose more than we win by a long way says everything we need to know about our confidence at home. And let's be honest here, right? The games that we need to win, 3 of 4, I've got 4 home games left, I think. 3 of those 4 home games are teams that, in fans' minds, we should win. Bristol, Plymouth, West Brom, Huddersfield. If just put whatever you feel about a player to one side and literally do what Walter said, just back them for those games, get us over the line, and you can say whatever you want in the summer. But for now, just stop it, because it's doing no one any favours. And, well, I guess there'll be many people there to boo next season if we do go down, because I'm sure the attendances will drop even more. But anyway, let's move on. We've turned, let's not talk into Norwich too much, to a 30-odd minute conversation about Norwich and fans. Never mind. So, opposition audio will play out now, and then Dan will come to you for my other match results. So, Alex from Norwich has been in touch with his post-match thoughts. No doubt that he's going to be feeling quite happy after their 3-0 win.
Hello, Adam Harvey here from the Pink, and Dan's kindly asked me on the show to share my thoughts and feelings after our game before the international break. Of course, Norwich City winning 3-0 at the Bet365. A great day for everyone associated with Norwich City. A huge 3 points that could be monumentous in our season, really. It built the gap to Coventry and Hull, which anyone that would have seen the table before, Hull and Coventry weren't playing on that day. So it was a huge, huge result for us. But yeah, real disappointment if you were probably of a Stoke persuasion. I thought on the day, very, very, very poor in terms of Stoke. And I was surprised, to be honest. I mean, I remember speaking in the preview kind of about Stoke's upturn in form, 2 wins from 3, Norwich's poor away form. I was slightly apprehensive. I felt Norwich probably on the day would have the quality to get the result and get what they required, particularly given that Falk Berger wasn't available, of course, for Stoke. And Dan, you know, very much emphasised the importance of him and how crucial he is to the Stoke side. But yeah, on the day, I mean, Ben Pearson going off injured felt like a pretty big turn in the game. I mean, you know, up to that point, it was fairly even, but I mean, the opener is defensively is absolutely shambolic. It was like knife through butter. Signs, as soon as, you know, he got Pearson off his back effectively with the substitution, it felt like he ran riot, and very much the player that we all know from a Norwich perspective is a real threat when you allow him to get into the games. And of course, he slid Sargent in for the opener, huge part in the second as well, which of course fell to Gabriel Zara, 21 goal contributions now this season. I spoke about him in the preview and how dangerous he is. He's a real class above. And then from then on, it was really cruise control for Norwich. You know, they finished the job obviously with Ashley Barnes making it 3-0, but I was surprised, if I'm being honest, at just how poor Stoke were. I thought, you know, given some of the sides I'd seen in recent weeks, I thought Stoke probably would have been a much tougher test. But yeah, disappointed. And I mean, it's a huge 8 games now for you guys to try and turn your season around. But, you know, I back it. I think, you know, you look at the results prior to that, hopefully it won't be a huge confidence knock for those associated with the Potters. I think for us now, it's just about kicking on. We've got some really big games coming up. So, yeah, international break probably didn't come at the right time for us, but maybe it's come at the right time for you guys. So, of course, best of luck for the rest of the season. You know, in an ideal world, we're promoted, but if we aren't, then we'll be seeing you guys next season. I think you'll have enough in the tank to stay up.
Appreciate it, mate. Yeah, I can't blame the fact that, you know, you're a happy boy, and like I said earlier, I think on another day you come away with more wins. So good luck for the rest of the season. We may or may not speak to you again next year. We'll soon see. Dan, finishes off, mate, with the Man of the Match poll results. I'm sure that was an interesting one that you dared to put it out after that defeat, but which way did people go?
I left it a long, long time.
Noticed.
It's a good job there was an international break, because I think it was about 8 days after the game, wasn't it, when the poll went out. The dust had settled long enough by that point. But yes, the joint third place was Jordan Thompson and Bae Jun Ho with 7% of the vote. 11% of the vote went to Kiana Hoover, and 52% of the vote went to Daniel Everson. So yes, they lose 3-0 at home, and the man of the match is still the goalkeeper. It's not the best, is it?
No, that's not for the first time this season. I'm not sure it's going to be for the last either. Yes, okay. Laurie, Iverson, does he get your man of the match? For me, I mean, for me, he does as well, because it could have been even more embarrassing.
Yeah, definitely. We mentioned it at the start. He was the vocal point. He had a very busy afternoon, didn't he? So, and certainly not helped by our back three, or should I say back five? Yeah, MON, well deserved.
Dan, agreed.
Yeah, I think he's and the main one who came out with he's even held his head high kind of thing. Goals were really his fault.
Yeah, cool, full house. Okay, right, let's move on to this week's news. Now, we're going to be mixing this up a little bit. We normally do the youth and women's first. We're going to leave that to the last bit, actually. I'll come back to you for that, Dan. But one thing that we can say on a more positive note, let's try and change things around a little bit now. Season tickets were released this week. 17 consecutive seasons. Incredible, really. Now, I think it's a great effort from the club. They don't need to do it. They haven't needed to do it at any point, whether that's now, whether that was when we had 10 years in the Premier League and Europe and all that. They've never once put them up in 17 years. Now, I mean, boys, are you both planning on renewing for next season? Sorry to put you on the spot, but on renewing?
I shall be renewing, yes. I shall be there.
Match day tickets for me. I'm predominantly more away matches personally, but... wouldn't be a season ticket for me, but yeah, just a handful of match day home tickets and then away matches.
So I bet you're looking forward to Blackpool away next season, aren't you, Laurie?
Golden Mile. I'll order my camel ride, or should I say donkey ride, across the pier.
I can see it now. Me, you, and Dan on the back of a donkey. And no, we don't mean the Stoke players. We mean an actual donkey on the on the beach.
I was just going to say.
Schumacher the donkey, is he?
We took one to Preston the other week, didn't we?
God's sake. You've thrown me off completely now. I think the vast majority of people were happy with the 17th season. I don't think anyone wouldn't be. Although, sorry to turn a positive into a negative, and I don't mean to do that, but I was looking through the comments earlier on, and there was a number of people saying, well, you know, it doesn't matter whether you're going to renew or not next season. It doesn't make a difference if your opinion is based on, you know, whether we stay up or go down. I think everyone's entitled to make their own decision based on, you know, financial situations and personal situations. I've always been a true believer that if you really aren't enjoying it and it's getting you down at the weekends, you shouldn't feel the compulsion to go. And I absolutely always stand by that. So I saw a lot of people digging into comments with people saying, oh, you know, I'm going to go next season depending on what league we're in, and people were calling them out for it. And I'm like, firstly, it's nothing to do with you, what you think. You know, people are entitled to their own opinions, like I've said. They're entitled to not go if they're not enjoying something. Like, I don't see this, I don't know, this badge that people want to wear because they've had a season ticket for 45 seasons. It makes them a better fan than the other one. It absolutely doesn't. And I just again, don't see why people do that. Like, stop being so on top of your fellow fans about things like that. Now, another one I saw was, oh, you know, if we go down, does that mean they're going to get cheaper? And I'm like, well, did they put them up when we were in Europe? Did they put them up when we win, you know, ninth place finishes? No, they didn't. So why do you think they should put them down if we get relegated? And Dan, you saw the prices as well. Some season tickets in League One are astronomically higher than our current season ticket prices.
It is completely, it is absolutely ridiculous, isn't it? The prices of some of these tickets. I think, yeah, we should be really, you know, super grateful for the price freezes that we've had for such a long time now. And just to put it into context for people, because obviously, you know, it's not actually a price freeze, it's actually a price reduction every year, because obviously, you know, with interest, obviously interest rates what they are, and inflation, everything, you know, things go up year on year. So to hold the price is actually to make it cheaper. So if you to think about it, right, £344 is your standard adult ticket in that 365 Stadium season ticket. Now, to pay £344 now is the equivalent of paying £197.84 in 2007, which was when these prices started. So, and if you look at it the other way, when we were paying £344 in 2007, if that had gone up with inflation, these season tickets now would be £598 today. So that, you know, they've nearly halved in the price. We're paying half the price that we were in 17 years ago.
Yeah. And people want to complain about that, right? look, I understand things are tough, but I think people are very quick to jump and slate because we're having a bad season. And I don't know, maybe it's just lashing out, Dan. But I think that's very, very clear. Like, again, name me another professional football club that have had 17 seasons of no increases. I'd be surprised if there is one, and maybe there is one, but well, I doubt it.
I think you'll struggle to find anything that's the same price now as it was in 2007.
Yeah. Even the pies have gone up, Dan. It's shocking. Pies and oatcakes and everything. I had one of those multi pies for the first time. Oh. Yeah. See, I'm a meat and potato fan, but those multi pies, I was with Dan, I can't remember which game it was, and I got the scent of one and I wasn't hungry and I was like, my God, they smell amazing. And I said, right, next game I'm getting one and I've never looked back. Oh my God, they're so good. Anyway.
Have you gone on for the boat cake?
No, I haven't, to be honest. There's always a queue and I'm like, I don't know, it just doesn't interest me. I can't tell you why. Just, I don't know.
You can have a beer there as well, which is quite pleasant. But yeah, I mean, the service is pretty good. And as you say, there is a crowd, but it almost brings a bit of chat with people pre-match. And I quite like it.
I bet they're not looking forward to the fan zone opening when all that goes on, because that's going to cost them a lot of custom. So, yeah, so again, in terms of like season tickets, you know, good on Stoke for doing that again. Really good to see. Are you going to be moving your seat, Daniel, or are you going to be in the same place?
I will be remaining where I am currently, which is Block 23 in the Booth and End, if anyone ever wants to pay me a visit. In fine area.
Row 28, if I remember rightly.
Row 28, correct.
Yeah. See, I'm not going to give you seat number out. Yeah, it would be a bit harsh, wouldn't it?
Kel, the Tyrese Campbell haters coming after me.
Yes. Now, in other news, we've done, but guys, don't worry about it, right? We've been looking for a prolific goal scorer. We've got one. We've got one. Did you not know? Wesley, our Brazilian king, is going on holiday in a way of improving his goal scoring ratio, which is 0 goals in 20 matches. Can someone explain to me how going on holiday means you're going to all of a sudden find your shooting boots? I'm a little bit puzzled on that one. Well, you know what? In fairness to the guy, right? Look, I just don't think we're the right club for him. I also, in the same breath, don't know how you get the best out of Wesley. We've always said, you know, he's a big guy, which means he should be probably at least one of two things, either good in the air or good with the ball of it. You know, if physical, can hold the ball up, lay it off to somebody else. I don't think we play the ball in the air to give him much of an opportunity, to be honest. Maybe we'd see the best of him in that sense. But as far as holding the ball up, which is a lot of times what he's been brought on to do, he's got the touch of a ballerina, mate. Unbelievably bad. Like, Crouch was great in the air, great on the deck, and could control the ball, hold the ball up. He is the non-league version of Peter Crouch for me. And it's such a shame, because I'm sure there was a player in there once, but we just don't play to his strengths, do we?
I don't think... I don't think he's had a run of games either, has he? But the problem being, his performances haven't warranted him having a run of games. So he can't really complain at it. But I think what he possibly needed coming here after his injuries and everything was, you know, 6-8 starts in a row to get the cobwebs off, get a bit of rhythm going, get a bit of belief in his body again. And like I say, he's not really had that. He has shown glimpses. I think he can be quite nippy. I think we haven't used that. I think he's a striker in the sense of he probably wants to be able to run onto things. And I think he's got the pace And then he's got power as well, so he can maybe run onto things. You know, he's got the power to hold off a defender and get a shot away. I think he's had a couple of efforts when he has been on. I was watching the highlights of the Brighton Cup game when he started the other day, and there was a chance there where we were counter-attacking and we'd switch the ball, and he'd run after it, turn a pace. Got into the corner of the box, cut back onto his right foot and killed this shot just wide from like the edge of the box. And I thought, there's something there. And I think, he has had glimpses of it, just he hasn't shown enough. It's been very inconsistent from him. And that possibly is down to, like I say, the last couple of years he's had with injuries. He's obviously not going to be here next season, is he? And he's probably another one who, if he goes somewhere and gets some running games, he'll probably, be bulging the net, won't he, for 15, 20 goals, probably. Because, like I say, there's obviously ability in there. But, yeah, I think as well, like I say, we're probably not the right fit for him in that it's quite similar to Crouch, which sounds weird considering he's got the record for most heady goals in the Premier League, but I don't think I never considered Peter Crouch's main ability to be with his head. I thought he was very good with his feet, his chest, and his close control was what set him apart from other big target men for me. With Wesley, I think he's not great. He doesn't seem to be great in the air, but I think if we played in a style where we could play and drop the ball in behind the defence and getting him running onto it and making defenders turn towards their own goal, I think that could be where you get the best out of him. But we know with how many home games have we had in recent years where teams just sit back. Teams, especially if they've got a goal, advantage, sit back. Knowing that we struggle to break teams down. And I think when we have chucked him on in numerous times as a sub, it's been when we've been chasing a game and the opposition, like I say, are sort of locked in the penalty box, and then we just lump balls up to him, and it just doesn't suit his strengths, I don't feel.
Laurie, you were going to say as well?
Yeah, I spoke to a Villa fan pre-season and he said he'll score goals if he stays fit. And yeah, Dan made some very interesting points. I agree with them. He hasn't had a run of games where we've been able to sort of figure out his key strengths. Of course, it's going to be based around physicality. We're not a team that gets early balls into the box, so that would potentially suit him best. We're very delayed in getting balls into the box, and it just doesn't suit him. A lot of our wide players as well are almost like inverted wingers who cut in field. We don't have wide players like we used to with sort of Matty Etherington and like Jermaine Pennant that are going to whip balls in to a number nine. So we suit more a nippy forward. But yeah, as a nine, he could score goals. We just haven't had an opportunity to see what he's like yet.
No, and good luck to him in his future. I really hope, for it, one thing you can say about him, he's never once come on and tried to play badly. He's never once come on and never tried. We're just not right for him, as we've all just kind of said. So good luck to him anyway. You know that he will not be here next season anyway. That's pretty much it for the news. So Dan, if you want to go into the under-18s, under-21s and women's forwards, mate, with some updates.
Yes, mate. Well, the under-18s, they've had a pretty good couple of weeks, to be fair. Saturday the 16th, they travelled up to Newcastle and came away 4-2 victors. So a couple of goals for Luke Enright, and then a goal for Ogbebo and one for Fern. And then last Saturday, the 23rd, they travelled up to Sunderland, so not too far away from Newcastle, and won 4-2 again. Same goal scorers as well. Fern got one again. Only this time it was Ogbebor grabbing the brace, and then Wright got one. A week off for the under-18s this week. Next game for them is Saturday the 6th of April when they host Middlesbrough at Clayton Wood with a 12:30 kickoff. So yeah, they're in decent form at the minute. The under-21s now, since we were last together, Friday the 15th, they had a 2-1 victory away at Derby. Darren McGuinness and Nathan Lowe goals in the first half sealed that victory. And then on Tuesday the 19th, they had a 1-0 defeat at Leek Town, to end their staff senior cup campaign at the semi-final stage. Their next game as well isn't for a little while yet, so Monday the 8th of April, they have Arsenal at home. 7 p.m. kickoff. Bet365 Stadium is the venue for that one. So yeah, we might get a bit of a crowd down there, Arsenal at the Bet365 again. And now the women. So yeah, they had a 2-0 win at home to Derby on Wednesday the 13th. Goals from Heidi Logan and Saffron Jordan. Before a late turnaround saw them lose 2-1 to High Flying Burnley last Sunday. So Heidi Logan gives Stoke the lead. But yeah, Burnley equalised with about 20 minutes to go and then won the game with the very last kick of the match. So yeah, a bit of a kick in the teeth there for the ladies team. This week, they're at home to Halifax, 2 p.m. kickoff on Sunday. Now, this match isn't at the Emery Stadium in Norton. This one is actually at Clayton Wood. So yeah, the women are going to play this game at Clayton Wood at the training ground. International roundup. So we had a few players off on international duty, and it was good news for Jaden Dixon. So he made his England under 17 debut in the 5-1 win over Northern Ireland. Million Man Hough scored a fantastic goal for Holland under 21s in their 3-0 win away at Moldova. Nikola Jojic played 16 minutes for Serbia's under 21s as they lost 2-1 against Northern Ireland. Jordan Thompson, now he started Northern Ireland's 1-1 draw away at Romania and then was a late substitute in the 1-0 victory up at Hampden Park against Scotland. Daniel Johnson, he's been on Jamaica duty. He played 56 minutes of the CONCACAF National League semi-final game against USA. Unfortunately, USA equalised in injury time and then went on to win 3-1 in extra time. Jamaica did claim the bronze medal, though, won the third, fourth place playoff in that. Another man who's been in action in tournaments is Bae-jun Ho with South Korea under-23s. So he played twice for South Korea, helping them reach the WAFF Championship Final, including setting up the only goal of the game in the semi-final win over Saudi Arabia. But then Stoke sort of, you know, had a bit of contact with the South Koreans and said, you know, we wanted him to fly back so he could be, you know, prepared and be available for the game against Hull. They agreed, they allowed it to happen, and Korea did go on and won the tournament. They beat Australia on penalties after a 2-2 draw in the final. So well done to them.
Cheers, Dan. Interesting as always, mate. And hopefully we'll get a Loney review off you as well, please, in the coming weeks. Not quite sure who we go for. I'll let you decide. But yeah, nice to get a Loney review in there somewhere, mate. That pretty much does it for the new sections. So we've got a massive game against Hull, a tricky game against Hull on Friday. So let's have a quick chat about that one as well.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Daniel, do you want to kick us off with the ref watch and also the stats? I think there's some interesting ones as well this week.
So, we have met Hull 75 times, 34 victories, 20 draws, 21 defeats. At Hull, we've played them 35 times, 13 wins, 9 draws and 13 defeats. So, not too bad. Now, we've won six and lost just three of our last 12 trips to the KC Stadium. Well, I say KC, it would be the old ground for Hull as well, because that dates back 32 years, that run does. Interestingly as well, first goal could be crucial, as always. Both teams have scored only once in the last five matches between these two sides at Hull. So something to consider there. Steven Schumacher's record against Hull, just a one match, which was a 1-1 draw at the KC in September when he was manager at Plymouth. The Steven Schumacher against Liam Rosenia, so you have the game we just mentioned there, plus a 3-2 win away at Derby when he was Plymouth manager in September 2022. Liam Rosenia's record against Stoke, there's been two matches, both played at the Bet365 Stadium, which was the 3-1 win for Hull in September of this year, and then the 0-0 draw last February. Let's say also at the Bet365. Stoke's away form, they are 19 points, which is them 17th in the away table. They did win their last away game after four consecutive away defeats in a row. Last five matches, Stoke have 6 points from them, which puts them 15th in the form table. And the last five matches actually go loss, win, loss, win, loss. Which means this should be a win, yeah? Well, let's hope so. Hull's home form, they've picked up 28 points at home, which has them 11th in the home table. Although they have no win in the last four home games and just one win in the last seven at home. Last five matches for Hull seen them pick up 7 points, and they are 14th, just one place above Stoke in the form table. In fact, they have drawn their last four matches. Hull's joint top scorer with 8 goals are Tufan and Connolly. So Ozan Tufan has started just one of the last 5 matches though, whilst Aaron Connolly, due to not being picked and also being injured, is yet to start a match this year for Hull. Both sides have missed 2 penalties each, Hull scoring 3 of 5, while Stoke have scored just 1 of 3 in the league. Stoke have got 10 clean sheets this season, for Hull 9. Only Norwich and Sunderland have attempted more than the Hull's 23 shots from free kicks. So it looks like they're not shy from having a dig when they get a free kick in and around the box. But Hull have hit the target with 34.9% of shots, which is the third best in the league. Whereas nobody has hit the target less than Stoke's 27.1%. Not great. Stoke 35 and Hull 33 have used the most players out of any clubs in the Championship this season. Jaden Philogene, now he's the man who's been in form all season for Hull, hasn't he? He's attempts more shots per 90 minutes, 4.01, than any player in the league. So more shots per 90 minutes than anyone in the league. Ryan Mai is actually 9th on that list. Stoke's highest man is 3.3 shots per 90 minutes. 55% of Lewis Baker's shots have hit the target this season, the 5th highest in the division. Jean Serre is in the top 10 for pass completion percentage. 90.6% of his passes find a teammate, which is an impressive statistic. Keanu Hoover, now this will be an interesting battle because he has tackled 52 dribblers this season. So 52 times people tried to take him on and he's tackled them and took the ball away. The 5th highest in the league. Whilst Jaden Philogene has 65 successful take-ons, which is the 8th most in the Championship. So that should be a real good battle there. Philogene, he's carried the ball into the box 61 times, which is the 5th most in the league as well. Graham Scott, he is the man with the whistle. 14 games he's left this season, 56 yellows given out, 3 reds, 4 penalties, 8 home wins, 4 draws, just the 2 away wins. He's ref Stoke on 6 occasions, given us 16 yellows, no reds, and no penalties for and 1 penalty against. We have 2 wins, 1 draw, and 3 defeats in that time. He's also ref Hull on 6 occasions, given them 7 yellows, no reds, no penalties for, 1 penalty against. They have 2 victories and 4 defeats from them 6 games. On this day, so a little bit different. So we have played 39 matches on Good Friday and we've won just 4. So I think it's about time we've got a 5th. Yeah. Anyway, here's some audio to cheer us up. the ever reliable Graham McGarry, and also Ant from To Hull and Back podcast.
Yeah, hi there, it's Ant from the To Hull and Back podcast, and yeah, our form's been quite indifferent at the minute. I mean, we are 7 unbeaten, I think 1 defeat in the last 10, but it's 4 draws in a row. 3 of those draws were against sides, you know, in and around us, like, you know, Preston's and Leicester's, but the draw against Birmingham just wasn't good enough. Multiple chances, you know, usual story of our season where we create chance after chance and give soft goals away and end up dropping points. So, yeah, we're in kind of a weird phase where we're really trying to push for the top six, but, you know, we're missing Liam Delap, key player to our system, and we're missing that natural number 9. We brought in Noah Ohio, who's a young Dutch under 21 striker. He looks raw, but obviously inexperienced at this level. And then you've got Billy Sharp, who is experienced at this level, but perhaps too experienced at the minute. You know, he's not really got that agility. He's not the player he used to be. And Aaron Connolly, who's made of glass and is always injured. So we're really struggling to have a natural striker on the pitch, and it is showing. We're struggling to put chances away. But that being said, we do have the likes of Fabio Cavaglio, Jaden Philogene, Anna Sarori, you know, players on that pitch that can do real damage. The new signing Abdush has been an absolute gem. So yeah, I mean, we're kind of trugging along nicely, but the feelings are, you know, it's been a positive season. We wanted to be in the conversation for the playoffs as like a bit of an aim, and we're there. That's what we're doing. I think Rosini's been backed in January, and it's time for them for the big players to step up and show what they're made of. So there's optimism, a little bit of, you know, maybe worry at the minute, because we're, you know, Norwich are in really good form, Coventry coming up behind as well, and we seem to just be dropping points at the minute. So we need to quickly convert draws into wins, and definitely at home where, you know, we really struggle to win games. So yeah, it's overall positive, but feeling like we're a very nearly side at the minute. So but I feel like Friday will be a must win with us, you know, going to Leeds on Monday. So I feel like we'll throw everything at this one. I'm going to go for a Hull City 2-1 win. Thank you.
Hello there, once again, you Potter's predictors. So the final international break is coming to an end as we get ready now for action in the Championship away at Hull City on Good Friday afternoon, followed a few days later by a home game, a very important home game against Huddersfield Town for Stephen Schumacher, Stoke City. Things are looking a little bit better in the league table, but there's still plenty of work to do. It's still very, very tight who's going to slip out of the Championship at the end of the season. Games are coming thick and fast now. We're down to single figures, and every point at stake is vital. Can Schumacher's side get something from that long trip to Hull City? They're an interesting side, Hull. They have lacks in consistency, and that might just cost them their place in the playoffs. But at the moment, going into Friday's game, they're very much contenders for a playoff play. So a tough game for Stoke City, but fingers crossed, the confidence will be good. The training has probably worked well for them, having that international break. Now they've got to put it all out on the field come Friday afternoon, and then, of course, be ready for Easter Monday afternoon against another fellow struggler in Huddersfield Town. But the first prediction is going to be a decent one for you Stokies. Hull City 1, Stoke City 1.
And Graham, thank you very much. Appreciate it, as always. Again, we'll no doubt speak to Graham all next season, regardless of what division we're in. And, who knows? We'll soon see. But I think no real worries for me that you're going to go up. I don't think you will. So, I'm hopeful we're going to speak to you next season either way. So, I guess, now, boys, just to kind of look ahead to this one, I think this is a really dangerous game. I mean, weeks ago when I looked ahead, you know, pre-Leeds, to be honest, I was kind of saying that for me, I think this will be one of our heaviest defeats, and we'd lose by more goals than we would to Leeds. I still stand by that, actually. Now, it's obviously easy to do that when you've lost 1-0 to Leeds. It's not difficult to lose by more than one. But, you know, Luke, I think they are strong for me in all the areas that we are weak. You know, we've got Phil Jean Bidace. They've got some really pacey players. They've got some pacey people on the wing. I think they're going to be able to absolutely make the most of those weaknesses that we've got at fullback position. Now, we talked earlier around like four at the back. I absolutely think we need to go four at the back. I don't think this five at the back slash wing play is going to be right, because I think when they get the ball back during the, you know, the kind of crossover and play, and you know, if we lose the ball, they're going to be able to break pretty damn quick. And I think they can break not only quickly, but I think they'll also have the ability to break with quality. And I think we could very quickly let this game run away from us if we're not careful. So for me, play the four at the back. We'll go through teams and stuff in a minute, but we need, if it's going to be, you know, Kiana and it's going to be, you know, Jordan at fullback, if that's the way we're going to have to go down, those players just need to sit in there and defend. We can't let them have those gaps. Let's make them come through the middle, because I think when we've got that flat back four, and you know, you've got McNally and you've got Rose, so I think when you've got that flat back four with those personnel, I actually do think we've got a good enough defence to get us through these games. It really is when we're opening ourselves up. So I think we really need to be careful about, you know, the counter-attack. I think they'll probably try and take the game to us, but at the same time, you know, we need to be prepared that we are going to see periods in this game, and they could well decide that, look, you know, let's let them have the ball for the first 5 or 10 minutes and we'll catch them cold. It wouldn't surprise me if that's the kind of route they go down. So that's kind of where I'm expecting us to feel some pain personally on Friday. I mean, Dan, I'll come to you first. I mean, are you expecting a similar type of game to that? I mean, you must obviously see the likes of, you know, Phil Jean Bidace, and, you know, if only we had that Phil Jean when he was with us. We seem to get these players about a season too soon, don't we?
Yeah, we give them the base experience that they then develop, take on and develop elsewhere. But yeah, Phil Jean, you know, one of the division's best wingers in TN, and I think he'll be back in the Premier League sooner or later, whether that's with Hull or not. Zaror is on the other wing, isn't he? I mean, obviously, you know, he was a star man for Burnley last season as they sort of walked the Championship, and now he's obviously back in this division with Hull. Fabio Carvalho, I mean, a couple of years ago, as a teenager with Fulham, he was ripping the division up, you know, joined Liverpool, and he got three fantastically, technically talented footballers there, who, you know, on their day will give anybody, you know, a bit of trouble. So you've got to be wary of that. Like I say, I'm with you. I think when we go five at the back, I think it gives confusion amongst the back line more than anything else. They seem to struggle as to what each other's jobs are, where the movement is, and, you know, how many times have we seen sort of a runner go through and they're all sort of looking at each other and go, oh, I thought you were picking him up. And I think when they go with a flat back four, and we need to keep it solid. For me, I mean, you mentioned Jordan Thompson. I think with obviously Ben Pearson's hamstring injury, Vouterberger's suspension, Thompson's probably going to have to play midfield, which means Gucci's going to be left back.
Yeah.
That's a worry, I think. You know, Zaruri, Phil Jean, you know, into sort of, you know, switching wings and whatever, whichever one is up against Gucci at any particular time, they are both wingers that have the criteria and the skill set that gives Gooch problems. That there are certain wingers that he can come out on top of. You know, he's always going to keep going. There's nothing against him when we say this, because his, you know, his energy levels and his commitment can never be questioned. But at left back, I think there are certain types of wingers that do get, that not just get the better of him, but really, you know, to choose a better way to destroy him on that pitch for those 90 minutes. And I think that they've possibly got that skill set. Whether you try to counter that, put Jordan Thompson at left back, and maybe put Lyndon Gooch as your midfielder. He's certainly got the energy to play that sort of defensive midfield role. We haven't seen him play there. I imagine he's done it for Sunderland before. So whether we want to test that out, I don't know.
My worry, you see, I think what he could do is he could drop potentially Josh Loren or, you know, Baker a bit deeper, and I think he'd be very prone to want to bring Kundal into this, and I think this is absolutely not the right game for Kundal. He's too raw, he's too much of a, I don't even like using this word because I haven't really seen much of him, a luxury player, but I don't mean that in the sense that he could just transform the game for us in that way. He kind of floats through games, and I just don't think this is the right type of game for him. And we all know he's brought him in, he's one of his players. You know, he does like to bring him off the bench. And like you said, if we're having to play maybe Thompson at left back and move the midfield around a little bit, I think that's what he'd be more prone to do, is just drop the other two deep and bring Kundal in a bit more higher up. But I think we lose that attacking prowess for me in the midfield. That's my problem with that type of solution.
I wonder whether, if he does play Kundal, whether he might be better playing Kundal, having Loren is a bit deeper, maybe having Kundal, Baker, and then maybe even having Jono in front of them, because I think that those three, Jono, Baker and Kundal especially, are very good at keeping the ball. And very good at quick movements with the ball, quick, you know, one touch passing in, you know, triangles and work, pass and move and working it. And I think if you are thinking that you're away from home and you want to take the sting out of the game, you know, you really need players who can just, you know, you get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 touches between the three of them, and you know, you've maneuvered the ball into an area where you can then, you know, maybe if you just knock it at that point, then knock it back to your fullback and you start again, but you've just got yourselves out of a bit of a danger, or you've just taken the sting out of the game. If Hull have just had a bit of a moment, you know, 4 or 5 minutes of pressing, right, you've got the ball, what you don't want to do is give it away. So you've got three good technical players, keep the ball, knock it around, right, knock it back to the defence, and then play around with it for a few passes, come back into the midfield and start building again. Because like I say, Hull have got very, very good players, so very good technical players, so there may be opportunities where we are really on the back foot and you do need that kind of play just to quiet the crowd down, break up the rhythm for Hull as well. So it can come in useful. I'm not saying that's what I would do, by the way, but I'm just sort of playing devil's advocate as to why that situation might occur and why you might feel that's the best way to go forward.
Didn't you know you were managing it the weekend, Dan? Did you realise?
Well, sorry, Luke, you're on the bench then.
Laurie, is there any scenario where we win this one?
No.
I was trying to look for positivity.
Yeah, I know it was. I should really slap myself on the wrist, shouldn't I?
Lie to me.
Yeah, exactly. Sweet little nothings in your ear of positivity, but no. Unfortunately, not. I think we lose the game. I think we fight bravely. I think Thompson at fullback works for me. He's going to stay at home. He's not going to be somebody that's, you know, getting into the final third and causing them problems. So if you're looking at a 1v1 with Philogene, although I do feel that if Philogene wants to get most of his luxury, he would stay over on Hoover's side. But he tends to make a lot of his runs over towards the right wing. So Thompson suits us really in that position in a 1v1. You'd definitely be looking at Rose and McNally as a central pairing. Their stats are actually quite good this year as a pair. They've done all right. I mean, it's just us defensively as a unit that we struggle a little bit more with. But yeah, I'd probably play Gooch a bit higher up the field, similar to how he played in the Birmingham away match. I don't think we're going to get a lot of joy in the final third against Hull. I think it's going to be quite a scrappy affair from our part. I think they're going to look to dominate possession. It would be a travesty if we had both Junho and Cundall starting the game. It's way too lightweight. So you'd be looking at Baker and Loren as potential sitters in the midfield. I do know that they play two holding midfielders as well and look to have wider players, you know, bombing on. But yeah, hate to be the bearer of bad news.
No, don't worry. I was looking for a bit of positivity. It's normally Dan. Dan can't give it me this week, so I thought I'll come to you, Laurie, and you can't give it to me. Let me just ask the wife. Hold on.
Denied.
Are we going to win? No, she doesn't think we're going to win either. So, yeah, it's a full house. This is my team, right? I think we've kind of maybe alluded to it. So I'm going to go 4-2-3-1-ish. But I'm with you, like, the back four, I'm going to go with Dan's, really. It's Gooch at left-back, Minnelli, Rose, and obviously Hoover. And I've got Jordan Thompson, Josh Loren as being those more holding midfielders with Junho on the left, Manhoof on the right, if he's fit, coming back from internationals. And we've then got Ryan Mai up front. Now, the only hesitation for me when I was looking at this was I think Ennis has got a really good engine, but Ryan May would probably be a better player in there just from a physicality perspective, where we are going to need to try and let it stick up there a little bit more, and I just think he can offer us that. So I think I'd be more inclined to play Ryan up there. And I think away from home, we've seen those little, you know, touches, little layoff touches and stuff that's got us a couple of goals away from home. So I do think that's probably the way that I would go. But again, I think a couple of different ways, but I'm right. We need the physicality. And you know what you said, scrappy. Like, if we can make this game scrappy and make Hull absolutely hate us, go down every opportunity, bloody kick players if we have to. I mean, if Ben Pearson's done, then get yourself £100 on a booking, because it's going to happen. But like, honestly, we just need to we need to make this an ugly game. I think we can't let them have those passages of play. We make this as ugly as we can, and we try and get something out of it. So, Dan, prediction: what scoreline are you going for?
Would you like my team?
No, I'm not interested. Joke, yeah, go on. Of course you can, mate.
You mentioned about Ben Pearson. I think he went off with a hamstring injury, didn't he, in the last match?
Yeah.
So even the slightest of hamstring injuries, unless it was literally just cramp-style tightenings, I don't think he'll be fit. We have, obviously, at the time of recording, we haven't had any sort of press conference or anything for the manager, so we don't know. So I do apologise for that, because that's the only thing of why when we record, isn't it? Sometimes by the time it comes out Friday morning, the manager's been out on a Thursday after we've recorded Wednesday night, and they're like, yeah, this player's missing, this player's going to be fit, and then we're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, 9 of the 11 players we've got don't even play for the club anymore. What's going on?
I've obviously got Everson in goal. Got Kiana at right back. I'm going with Michael Rose, Luke McNally as the centre backs. I think that statistically that they obviously seem to just work together as a pairing, as a unit. They, for whatever reason, just seem to produce the best results. And I think at this point in the season, it's all about what produces the best results. So that's why them two are playing. I think I'm going to have to go with Gooch at left back. I was wondering whether to bench either Thompson or Gooch, because obviously these sort of flying wingers, Zaruri, Carvalho, Philogene, if one of them was to pick up a yellow card, it may be the best option, especially, you know, Jordan Thompson's already been sent off two because this season. He's picked up, you know, a dozen yellows as well. Would it be better to have somebody there, left back on the bench, who you can just, even if it's half time, switch them over so you haven't got somebody on a yellow who's got, you know, one of the best in the league, knocking it past him and running him all the time? But I'm not going to actually do that today. So Gucci will be left back. Thompson will be defensive mid. I'm going to have Baker and Loren in front of him. Juno on the left. Manoff on the right, hoping to reconstruct in a Stoke shirt. That fantastic goal he scored for Holland's under-21s this week. And I'm gonna have Mai down the middle. Ennis is all energy and he's all action. He will press and he will harass players. And I think he's one of them, similar to what we said before. If you've got defenders who are a bit nervous, who aren't great on the ball, I think he is a great asset to have at that point, because he will hurry them and he will, you can build off, slice clearances, hurry clearances. You can pick the ball up in midfield from loose passes because they've been pressed. Or say you end up getting throw-ins 30, 35 yards out and you can build attacks from there. I'm not sure Hull are going to do that. I mean, they've got two very good fullbacks, haven't they? Two sort of confident fullbacks on the ball, especially sort of Ryan Giles on the left as well. So for me, interesting how you thought he's got a similar engine to Ennis. I think Ryan Mai's completely opposite. I think his movement is all sort of in reliance to taking the ball in. I don't think he presses or sort of harasses defenders in the same way as an Ennis would. I think he can come across as quite lethargic, but I think he's more of a technical forward. And we might not get that many opportunities in the final third. So to have somebody like Mai, who, when the ball comes to him, he's capable of either doing something himself or just get a little flick, a little bit of flair, just to put maybe Manoff in or Juno, or a breaking Baker or Loren. I think that could be the best chance that we've got of getting something from the match.
Anyway, what's your score prediction?
1-1.
Bloody hell, positives is returned, Laurie.
Yeah, I think we'll win, but I think Hull, I think it's 4 draws in a row they've had. And I can see us making it 5. I think we'll make it difficult for them. I think we'll stay compact. I think we will. They've had a couple of weeks to lick the wounds from Norwich. They'll come out. I think we've got Bay's been away with South Korea. He's done fantastic work with them. Manoff's lit up, for Holland under-21s, which, two not bad nations there. I know it's a youth level. But it's probably the very elite, the top end of youth level, the under 21s and 23s. And, they've both played or come back hopefully full of confidence. I think, I think if we can negate their threats and don't go down early doors, I think we'll definitely get something from the game. 1-1. And I'm going to go for Manhoff, I think he has put that one in the top corner. I think he'll give him a bit of confidence. And it probably will be a Ryan Mai. He'll just sort of turn the ball around the corner or something. Manhoff will be coming in, cutting off the wing, leaving, size of a defender and find the bottom corner.
Okay. A lot of positivity. Good. I bring this one back down to earth then. 3-0 loss for me. And I think I'd take 3-0 at this point because I do think they've got the ability to outscore us by some way. I don't know. It's just from bits I've seen. I've seen them play 2 or 3 times this season and it just worries me. That's all. Laurie, are you going to be with Dan? And I mean, I don't think from what you've said so far on this podcast that you're going to be going for a draw or a win, but don't want to put words in your mouth.
No, Mike, unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to give you that positivity. Sadly, I feel it's going to be a 2-0 loss. Hull are in good form. Last 10 matches, I believe they've lost once. And their manager's not going to need to say too much in the dressing room prior to the match. Pre-match, very simple. They're 3 points off playoffs and they're playing at home to lowly Stoke City. So I'd love to say that we'd go there and nick a point. I don't necessarily see it like that. I just feel we're going to come unstuck. There are similarities with my team. I've gone with Iverson in goal, back four of Hoover, Rose, McNally. I put Thompson at left back, as previously mentioned, about potentially dealing with Bidet's two sitters, Baker and Loren, Junho beyond them in the midfield three, and then front three, Million, Ryan Mai and Lyndon Gooch. So with obviously Million and Gooch dropping back into midfield to make a five as and when needed. But yeah, 2-0 Hull City.
Okay. All right. No worries. So a 2-0, 3-0 and a 1-1. Okay, cool. Lovely. I think that's pretty much it for the whole review side of things. Now, Mr. Buxton, do we have a quiz this week before anything else?
You do. It's a £6 challenge. It's not overly difficult, I don't think. Would you like to... well, I'll tell you what, I'll cover off your Super 6, your gaffer, and then we'll get into it. So you are 3 points behind me, aren't you, in getting Super 6? 3-4-5 for you, Mike. 3-4-8 for me. I'm 64th. 5 places ahead of yourself, as you just mentioned.
Yeah, I'm catching up. This is going to go to the wire, a bit like our season. I think Super 6 is going to go to the wire. Now, for anyone who maybe missed the pods previously, Dan wanted to do a forfeit this year for Super 6, and whoever lost had to go on as a mascot with the full kit. It was going to be like a charity thing and all that business. Now, we never agreed to it, and I'll be honest, it's squeaky bum time if me and you would have actually agreed to this.
Yeah,
I would have been really not been looking forward to these weeks at all.
I'd have definitely not missed the 3 weeks that I did.
But we've both missed weeks. Don't claim that you've missed all these weeks and I've not.
What I mean, is like they definitely wouldn't have missed 3 weeks if that was the case. If that forfeit was on the line, you probably wouldn't have as well. But I think. I wouldn't have. I'd say it wouldn't have been the end of the world. I think it would have been interesting, to say the least. It would have been a bit of fun.
Yeah, you never live that one down. Let's be honest. I mean, that's not my version of fun. I mean, Laurie, would you dress up in a Stoke kit and walk out with, I don't know, Junho or I don't know, Jack Bonham, something like that?
Hand in hand, of course.
Oh, should we? I'm never signing up for that, Dan. I don't care what you say. Yes, so obviously, thanks for the Super 6. And like you said, he's got some gaffer as well. Is it time for the quiz, Dan?
Yes, so the quiz this week. So one person we haven't mentioned in Hull is a certain Liam Delap. So obviously, he now plays for Hull. Another one who probably joined us a season too soon, but he is currently and has been for quite a while injured after having what was quite a promising start for Hull. So I am going to do this about Delap, but not Liam Delap, Rory Delap. Can you name me the last 6 clubs of Rory Delap's playing career?
Okay. I'll let you go first since you're the guest one.
Okay, so, well, Stoke, you'd have to say, I'm going to say Derby and Southampton would both be in there. Are we good so far? Are we warm?
Yes, so you've got Derby, so who are you saying first, Derby and Southampton?
Yes, please.
So, yes, they are 6th. Fifth.
You've got to go Sunderland because that's obviously where he came from.
So they are 4th.
You've got before Derby would have been Carlisle.
Well, bear in mind that Derby are 6th and you only want the last 6.
Oh, right. Sorry. Okay. Okay, so
he was on loan at Stoke as well.
I was going to say, so does that kind of count? Because that's two spells.
Just the clubs, yes. So the clubs. So Stoke will be number three. So yeah, Stoke are third. It's third most recent. Then Sunderland. Then Southampton. Then Derby. You've got all those. So you won the last two clubs he played for in his career.
Right. Well, Laurie, I mean, I know where he went.
I know one.
Oh, okay. Well, I know where he went out on loan, but do you know where he went after loan? Because I don't.
Yeah, that's, we've dovetailed well there, because I know his last club. I remember it.
Okay, this is nice and easy, Dan. You should have made this harder than this. So he went on loan to Barnsley, if I'm not mistaken.
For sure. He then went to Burton.
He did, where he linked up with Gary Rowett.
Yeah, I remember that because it was a sad day when he went, to be honest with you. And it was the time for him. He'd come to his natural end. But yeah, I loved Rory. I really did. The reason I remembered, like, the Carlisle came to my head, by the way, because he spent a few years at Carlisle, didn't he? And then I know he was like, he's kind of where it kind of kicked off for him. You know, he spent all his, you know, his youth and stuff through Carlisle and then moved his way through from there.
Yes, he did. Yeah, that was sort of, yeah, that's where he's sort of from, isn't it, naturally?
Yeah.
He started out at Carlisle, that well-known breeding ground for Republic of Ireland players. I think anyone who visited Derry on a ferry got that Irish team, didn't they, back in them days, early 2000s. The 90s and that, and yes, but yeah, it's fair play to Rory. He had a solid career, started out with Carlisle, didn't he? I think like his big move to Derby. A few years at Sunderland, Southampton, and then obviously, yeah, 6-7 years at Stoke, which I imagine for him, I know he didn't have bad spells at clubs beforehand, but I imagine he would probably say that was the peak of his sort of Stoke career, peak of his playing career.
Oh, 100%. If he hadn't come to Stoke and we hadn't have figured out his long throw, obviously we've all heard the story, we're not going to go into it now, but if we hadn't have discovered that, you know, in all due respect to Rory, he probably wouldn't have been anything special, and I don't mean that in a horrible way at all. I mean, he was obviously known for his long throw worldwide, and what I'm trying to get at is I don't think he would have been known worldwide if it wasn't for that. He was a good, solid midfielder. Yeah, I think he was better than some people gave him credit for, but that made him for me.
I think he was in there for his all-round attitude, his work rate, and probably, you know, 80% So it was a weapon. It was theatre. At the Britannia Stadium, that was pure theatre. When the ball went out, and you saw him get the towel out, and it was kind of like, it was almost like a cat at the front of a kangaroo, wasn't it, with the T-shirt. It was poetry, the way that the fans used to make that roar as well as soon as the ball left his hands, and then silence as it was going through the air. I'll never forget that long throwing against the Arsenal, when it was nigh on the halfway line and Ricardo scored in front of the away end, and you could hear a pin drop as the ball was floating through the air. Silence. Amazing.
And obviously the time he threw it, I think he did it once or twice, he threw it straight into the goal from just in front of the halfway line as well. There was so many times. I mean, yeah, what a fantastic contribution he was.
How did the referee allow every time we got a throw in 35 yards in goal? You think how often they hurry players up, oh, come on, take a throw in, come on, get on with it. Yet we were allowed, because he was worried a lot, because he was launching into the box, everything stopped. The centre half had trudge up at a, you know, doing the dad run when they into the box, everything would get set up. It's a take that, you know, you think this is for a throw in. You know, referees to be more things say, come on, get on with it now. Come on, get on, chuck it in. You know, get the ball back in play. Because they would for anything. You know, if we were taking it short, they would have done well before, wouldn't they? And
it makes you think, though, Dan, do you think there was a a bit of a conversation going on in the Premier League to say, this is great for our ratings, this is great for our exposure. Just let them have a bit of leeway.
Yeah, well, I think as well. Like Laurie said there, the whole fans getting up for it and everything else, and the whole theatre of it, the refs probably got sucked into that, didn't they? Of, oh, yeah, this is just what happens kind of thing. I don't want to be the guy who's taking this away from Joe, because they just get involved in the situation and in that moment of what was occurring in the stands as well as on the pitch. But yeah, I think for Pulis and what he was looking for, that the lapse throw on more than one level, even things like that you might not have automatically come to mind, were probably a real godsend for him. And it just every time we got a throw, it could take, you know, 60 seconds out of the game.
Yeah.
They had to move the advertisement boards out the way as well.
Yeah.
I remember Brian Laws over at Burnley, he, in an interview prior to our fixture, I think we drew 1-1 with them or something over at Turf Moor. But anyway, they asked him, have you found a way of getting rid of the Rory Delap long throw? And he said, yeah, we bought in the boards. He's never going to get over these. So Rory hurdled them. And we ended up, I think it was Tunchai scored off of a long throw, a header. And Rory literally just leapfrogged over the advertisement boards and then launched in a throw that we then went and scored. So I think lots of fans enjoyed it, other than potentially the team that were on the receiving end of it that afternoon or evening.
Anyway, we better wrap this up, boys. We could talk about all night for Rory. But Dan, thanks for the six towns. We conquered it with ease, Laurie. So what a team.
Yeah. Strangely enough, I had some of the answers this time. So, yeah.
You did. You did, mate. Well, yeah, thank you. Well. Thanks to both of you for joining us. Crunch tie again, obviously, with Hull on Friday. On Monday, you'll have another pod coming out prior to Monday, by the way. So, Dan, did we agree that it's going to be on Sunday that the pod goes out for the Huddersfield game?
Yes, it'll be Saturday or Sunday, won't you? Obviously, be an Easter Sunday.
Yeah.
I don't know whether people would want it earlier. It being Easter Sunday? I don't know.
Yeah, either way, just make sure you're subscribed on whichever platform, Spotify, whatever it is, turn the notifications on. You won't miss it anyway. But even if you don't want to do that, it'll be out Saturday or Sunday, so you'll have it before the game. So, boys, appreciate it as always. Everyone else, enjoy the game. Fingers crossed we can get something. Go on, Stoke.
Go on, Stoke.
One Stoke.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.